Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
I have a question for you.
I hopefully have an answer.
If you Google British actors, what do you think is the first name or face that pops up?
You can't ask me to answer this question because you like beta tested it with me over text, so I know what you want to hear. Jordan thinks
it's Rory Kinnear.
Jordan thinks that Rory Kinnear is like basically the dictionary definition of what a British person looks like.
A British actor, rather.
A British actor.
I mean, he has that very particular British voice that feels like a particular accent that I'm sure has an actual name, but I don't know it. But like, he sounds very quintessentially British.
Yeah.
Everything about him. He's in, you know, the Bond franchise. So if you're in the Bond franchise, that automatically like adds like a British, you know, pence to your quarter or whatever, side, whatever.
I need to check if he was in Doctor Who. I'm sure he was, but that is like,
probably.
That's the real measure.
Or like Downton or like a BBC miniseries.
Yes, because this, in general, my favorite thing with British movies is trying to pick out how many major television shows is represented from the cast. Because without fail, you get at least like three.
Of course.
So funny.
Was he in Doctor Who?
Let's see. He was the Prime Minister in that Black Mirror episode.
Yes.
With the pig.
The first Black Mirror episode.
So
a hit.
Very important. He was in Penny Dreadful.
Yes. He's Tenna in Bond.
It does not look like he was in Doctor Who, which is honestly crazy.
But he's in like other BBC stuff.
He was in a BBC 4 TV drama, The First Men in the Moon, written by and co-starring Mark Gatiss, creator of Sherlock, friend of Benedict Cumberbatch. This is a perfect episode for Rachel to be on for a variety of reasons. So we're going to get deep into the Sherlock landscape. I can absolutely guarantee you.
I expected this. I expected this.
I'm bailing out.
This is like, I talk about Supernatural episode.
I love this.
I'm really like,
I love being
my soul
on the outskirts of specific fandoms that people are very much in. And I just like look in and I'm like, that's fascinating.
Well,
I like this.
You start talking about DC and I'm like,
right,
yeah,
no, it's the same thing.
Batman, you know, for sure.
Hey, what is bisexuality if not the duality of experiences, you know?
The duality of DC and Tumblr
and Sherlock. Yes. And Harley Quinn exists at the intersection of the two.
It does. Yes. It does. We are not here to talk about Sherlock, but in a way
we are here to talk about Sherlock.
Hi, I'm Brooke Solomon.
I am Jordan Gustafson.
And we are joined today by the absolutely delightful Rachel Labonte, writer and critic at Screen Rant. Rachel, it's so great to have you here.
Oh, it's so great to be here. I'm such a big fan of the pod.
Big fan of you.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Friend of the hosts, friend of the pod. But also
a friend of the pod.
Killing it professionally, best of both worlds. It's
huge.
Awesome.
It's huge.
And we are talking a movie that, as I understand, is very near and dear to your heart. 2014's The Imitation Game.
The Imitation Game.
Yes.
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 So
I want to know.
Oh, you're imitating me. Oh, I get it. I get it.
Oh my God.
That took a minute. That really took a second.
Wow.
I don't know. I just
joke over the head.
I thought that you like didn't want to talk about it.
No.
So you were like just trying to.
I was trying. I'm doing the thing. In the movie, I'm imitating.
I get it.
It's like a Turing test. You're the human, I'm the robot.
You're the computer.
Yeah, I'm trying to sell you that I'm a human. Yeah.
Rachel, you've seen Ex Machina, right?
I have, but it's been a bit, but I have seen it.
Wow.
Great film.
Oh, I mean,
came out the year after this movie.
Did it really?
It did.
Or the same year, because it's 2014.
It was kind of one of those like released wide, I think, in 2015.
Yeah.
And but I think
like
was,
festivals.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
It got nommed for some Oscars, so I think it would have been the same
Oscars,
year.
That's what it should have won.
I know. I agree. I think that that is what Alicia Vikander should have her Oscar for, and not for the Danish.
Oh,
I would agree.
100%.
Yeah.
And you know who also should have an Oscar for Ex Machina is Oscar Isaac for that dance he does.
Yeah.
So good.
Just
so
rude.
The dance alone.
The dance. Yeah. They were like, okay, not him and his whole performance, but just for the dance. Like, right?
Just the dance.
That
just
happens sometimes at the Oscars.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I mean, come on. Yeah. So frequently. Especially for a supporting actor turn.
Right.
Come on. Now,
hey.
It's literally so rude that he doesn't have an Oscar.
It's
an Oscar
I'm
for Oscar.
For it. And it's in the name.
The
it's
campaign's
in the name,
right
but
there.
I can't. If it should have probably been for like something like Inside Llewyn Davis. But,
yeah.
You know.
A perfect movie. Yeah. Zero notes. One of the greatest ever.
We all love Oscar Isaac.
We
He's
do.
The best.
Oh,
he can do it
Oscar
all.
Isaac.
I mean, I could talk about him for
hours.
A while.
Can
you
talk about Benedict Cumberbatch for hours?
No, I don't think he's that cute.
Well, he's
Is
a
that
very.
The, that's the Okay, here's the question. Reading the room, how do we feel about the Cumberbatch?
In general? Because there's like.
What, how do you feel?
There's a lot of different facets. Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel,
I know
weigh
you.
In.
Okay, here's the thing. My personal love of Benedict Cumberbatch has been like, it's been years because, you know, yeah, there was the Sherlock and I
of
had
course.
All that. And then he's slowed down over the years, which I respect because he has like a family. So he's gone down. So like now I'm kind of a bit cooler, but I still admire him. And I went to see his movie, The Courier, back in like.
Yes.
March, I think.
Previously
I...
called Iron Bark, which
Wait,
was a
yes.
way better title.
Yes,
yeah. It's
100%.
It's about Soviet spies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He
has a fascinating filmography where like sometimes he'll just like do a movie and you're like, right, like The Fifth Estate. You're like, right, you were Julian Assange.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
When I was looking at his filmography when I was watching this because I was trying to figure out what his hottest role is, because I was like, there has to be one. Well,
is it when he's in Black Mass and he's doing a voice that sounds like this with a little bit of an accent and you're like, Ben?
And
no.
Now I don't remember. I had like a take where I was like, Benedict Cumberbatch is hot in this movie. Oh, Doctor
Star
Strange.
Trek Into
I think he
it's
looks
true.
The hottest in Doctor Strange.
No, I think so too. I think that he pulls it off. I think even more so in specifically like Avengers Infinity War, because I feel like that movie wore, like it had better Doctor Strange moments. Like he was more in his powers.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was an attractive movie for him.
I agree.
Like him in Ragnarok.
Right.
I think he's great in that, where he's just like kind of like funny for like a bit, and you're like, oh, I kind of like this.
He can do comedy. Sherlock is quite funny.
Yeah. Like because it's almost like I noticed this while watching The Imitation Game this time. Noticing that, like, I feel like his Alan Turing has some bits in common with Sherlock in terms of how they are, but Sherlock is more outgoing, more like blunt, and he talks more, and then it plays
like
into the comedy more. Because,
yeah,
he's just a bigger like personality, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. But this was the pocket that Benedict Cumberbatch
lives in this pocket.
For so long was like the awkward genius.
It's like Khan even too. Khan is supposed to be like this like sexy, like sort of bare-chested Star Trek villain. And he's like, I am here and I am going to take over the world. My name is Khan.
He's sort
and it's
of
like
unnerving
the same energy.
In that,
yeah.
Right? I know, Rachel.
Yeah, like
you like that movie.
I do. I've seen that movie.
You trek into darkness.
So many times. I trek into darkness frequently. But yeah, like he's got like the intensity to it, because that one is one where he's pretty much like stone faced. I will kill you and I won't even blink.
Right.
Yeah. Do you remember when people were losing their minds over that shower scene?
In that movie?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, online, because I think it was actually cut. It's like a deleted scene.
I was like, I don't even remember seeing that in the movie.
Yeah, it's a deleted scene. But the footage is out there where it's like, it's just him bare-chested in the shower. And he's kind of like, he doesn't even have like a nice expression on his face.
No, he's
just
looking
like serious and just kind of like eyebrows drawn.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, it's got the water cascading.
They should have put that in the movie.
Losing their mind. I know.
That movie needed to be sexier. So I think that would have helped it.
Gotta sex
it
up.
Yeah, it would have sent the it would have sent Tumblr into a flurry. So
yeah.
Because Tumblr loves him, right? Like, it's him, Hiddleston, yeah, right? Are like two of the big boys.
He and Hiddleston are like so, like, that is like old golden era Tumblr. Right.
Them, yeah. And then it's the Supernatural boys.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mostly Collins. Jensen and Misha.
And
yeah.
They'll never go away.
Yeah.
I love this.
Some people like Jared Padalecki, but they're kind of like the weird subset. But like Benedict Cumberbatch, I feel like became the face of Tumblr for so long because people were like, this is so weird that people are into him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I learned about him as a person. Yeah. Like I went on Tumblr. Here we go. I'm a
of
Tumblr
course.
Person.
Yeah. We all know this. I was there. We were there together.
You're on the front
lines. Everyone was talking about him because it was in between Sherlock seasons. So everyone was just biding their time. And I was like, who is this guy? And then at the time I had an Entertainment Weekly subscription and I read each issue like cover to cover and they were talking about Star Trek Into Darkness and they were like, this is him. And I was like, oh, he's turning into like a big, like I should pay attention to this person probably.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I fell across him sort of similar where it was like, I was reading about him in like Entertainment Weekly, but then like the person I was dating or whatever at the time was like huge into Sherlock and therefore I had to like watch Sherlock to get into like
so, I didn't
like,
know that you had ever seen Sherlock.
I did. Yeah, I watched Sherlock.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But I was not on Tumblr. But they were like big into like Tumblr stuff like that. But I like watched it to like have the conversation with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But so I watched it.
Wow.
I will say interesting because it was so weird because it was coming out the same time as the RDJ one, which I was more drawn to, but it was like so like two completely like disparate
totally
versions
different
of the character.
Taste. I mean, yeah. The Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes is like, it's so Guy Ritchie. It's like, right. What if Sherlock Holmes was a bare knuckle boxer?
What if he could see a fight happening before the fight?
It's like, What if he was a cool badass? And BBC Sherlock is very...
What if he was a heroin addict?
Right. Very buttoned up, very British. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, great. There's also, we can't get too deep into it because we'll never like climb back out.
I love this. No, dig deeper.
But there was so, I mean, I don't even want to start with the discourse, but like there was so much that happened around like the attraction to specifically Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Do you remember the unaired pilot, Rachel?
Oh, I've seen the unaired pilot.
Oh, me too. I bought it on iTunes.
Of course, it was a whole thing with my roommates in college.
Oh my god.
I remember
god.
It vividly. But basically, so there was this unaired version of the pilot episode with basically the same cast, but different locations and a slightly different script. But the one thing that people were like surprised about is that it's much more romantic between Sherlock
Watson.
And John.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was like a whole thing where people were like, they had to reshoot this because it was too gay. It was
have
too
ever,
powerful.
Has there been a version of Sherlock where they fuck?
No.
Fuck.
I mean, do they have sex in Elementary? Not that really counts.
Oh, true.
I don't actually know if they, I mean, I didn't watch Elementary, but I feel like I never saw them push it towards romantic with them. Because I always saw that like Lucy Liu had her own kind of love interests elsewhere.
Got it.
Yeah.
Speaking of love interests. And love interests that get introduced on a TV show that are somewhat unexpected. Brooke, I have a few surprises that I'm going to sprinkle throughout this episode for you.
Okay.
But I will firstly just say that in Agent Carter in the pilot episode, they introduce a character who they seem like is going to be a future love interest for her, but apparently it doesn't play out.
Oh my god, this makes
Am
me
I
so
correct?
Happy. Who are you speaking
the
of
man
in
with
particular?
The cane.
Daniel.
Wait, the man with the cane, Daniel Sousa?
Yes.
Daniel
Love
Sousa.
Of my life, Daniel Sousa.
They have a flirt moment, and I was like, is this series going to have them date? So does she ever kiss anyone else on
Agent Carter?
Agent Carter.
She definitely does kiss Daniel Sousa.
Yes, she does. It's at the end. Yeah.
Look at that.
Oh my god, wait, you're not ready.
I have some surprises
for you. I can't
believe
you pulled this out because like, okay, let me, I'm going to give like the 5 second, we'll talk about the Imitation Game, we'll get there, but like, let me give you like the 5 second rundown is that after Agent Carter, Daniel Sousa transitioned to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you're talking to the world's biggest Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan, Rachel Avanti.
A show that exists.
Yes. And it exists.
It exists.
I have two different S.H.I.E.L.D. stickers on my laptop. It's my unsung I'll defend it till the day I die show.
It's no longer a part of the universe, right? They were like, this doesn't count, but
yeah. they've done a lot of stuff with their Disney Plus shows where they're like actively pointing out that they do not care about anything that happened on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I stand by it. I think people don't give it enough credit.
I liked the first couple episodes of the show. I just didn't keep up with it.
But what happens to Daniel Sousa,
yes,
is that so they go, so because Peggy ends up marrying him, right?
What?
Well, I don't know. The thing is that I don't know if that was ever confirmed. I feel like people started to assume that they married because they ended the show together and they didn't continue
their
the show.
Endgame.
And like Peggy in the movies references a husband who is like a soldier.
Right. Which
is
Sousa.
Like Sousa was. So I think you're led to believe that it was him pre-Endgame.
Yeah.
But then
Captain America's like, I'm going to cuck you.
Well, but then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is what happens is that they go back to the timeline where Peggy and Steve ended up together. Or how do they get Sousa?
Well, the thing is that they don't really touch upon anything that happened in Endgame. What's happening is that all of the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. involves them fighting these kind of alien robot crossovers who want to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. from the inside by going back in time and messing with certain key events.
Oh.
So one of those key events brings them back to Sousa, and they meet him. And they meet him around the time he's supposed to die. That's the other thing, is that there's a day where they're like, this day in history, Daniel Sousa died. But instead, they're like, we're going to fake your death and bring you with us. So then he sticks around.
And then he falls in love with Chloe Bennett.
And he does.
And it's a great time.
Wow.
Oh my God, I can't believe you watched the pilot of Agent Carter. I'm so proud of you.
I watched some other stuff too that we'll get to.
Okay, we'll get to it.
For those who don't know, for listeners.
This is
in December of 2020.
Yes.
Brooke and I made a deal that I had to watch Agent Carter and two other movies within the year. And I have lived up to my bargain, I will say.
And I have,
and you have not
lived up to
but
my end of the bargain
I
yet.
Watched because actually everything, it was like I was going to watch them at some point, but all of them actually are integral to like a part of like the conversation I think we're going to have today, which I think is fascinating.
Because I have
a very specific
type of movie that I like.
Yes, you do.
And I promised that I would watch three Muppet movies, which I have not done.
Shocking.
But I will do.
But okay, just while we're here on Agent Carter, I will say it is a show that exists. I cannot deny that it doesn't exist.
Thank you so much.
I didn't think it was great, but I really liked how they shot it and how everything felt like they shot it with like a gauze on the lens, and they basically styled it so it's like a 50s sort of like paper or whatever.
It's
like
fun.
I really liked
she
their stylistic
up to jazz
choices.
Music.
No, exactly. And it's like everyone talks a specific way, and it's like they're not trying to make it like a modern show.
Yes.
And by doing that, it's able to fit into like obviously like a network setting, but it also like makes it like era appropriate, which I think was fun.
Does the pilot have the lipstick that makes you knock out?
No, I don't think
so. I guess not. Because there is.
She was a wig.
There's a girl on girl kiss that involves that lipstick.
Oh, no, that does not happen. I would tell you if that happened.
Tragic.
What happens is she wears a blonde wig.
Yep.
She stabs a man in the side with a fork.
Yep.
James D'Arcy.
Yep.
Is in it as Jarvis.
Yep.
And I was like, cool. Dominic Cooper's there as Howard Stark. And I'm like, cute.
Yep.
He's Hayley great Atwell.
Hayley Atwell.
She has some chops that Hayley actress Atwell. Does.
She's so good.
She should be.
She's so good.
I can't
underrated.
Wait for her
I want
comeback.
Her more.
She should be in more.
Mission Impossible, dude.
That was obvious that she's gonna. She feels perfect for the Mission Impossible franchise.
Yes,
like she feels. Her and Vanessa Kirby feel like of the same blood.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I would say Rebecca Ferguson too.
Exactly.
Very English Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Very classical. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be awesome. Hayley Atwell would have been great.
Do we
in
think
the
Hayley
Imitation
Atwell
game.
Is gonna be a part of the MI, or is she gonna be a villain?
I think she's part of the MI with Palm.
Clementif. Cool.
Lots of Marvel peeps.
I like
that. Making the jump.
I like
so
that.
So many.
Yeah.
Wild.
It's going to be good. I can't believe you watched it.
I did.
This is very
surprise,
exciting.
Surprise.
Thank you so much. So how does it relate to this movie?
That one doesn't.
Oh, okay.
the rest do.
You just wanted the credit, you know.
At this point, I got home, not to Carbon Date, but we had seen a Marvel film. Actually, we saw a Marvel film.
We did.
Which one? I don't know.
You don't know.
It was Black Widow.
Was it Black Widow? Was it, you know, the other two coming out this year?
Yeah.
But So I was like in the Marvel mood, so I had to see it.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm very proud of you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Hayley Atwell, great.
I don't have a good transition for this. Hayley Atwell is great.
Hayley Atwell feels very reminiscent of another British actress who I love.
Keira Knightley.
Keira Knightley.
Who is in this movie.
Who is in this movie.
I wanted to ask how
like her?
Everyone
yes.
got involved with this movie, because I always think that that is interesting before we go too off the yes. rails, especially Rachel. Rachel, why don't you tell us about your experience with this movie? When did you first see it? How has it grown in your relationship with it?
Well, for me personally, it was like it came out when I was a senior in high school, and I had just watched Sherlock, so I was feeling a lot of things. And it was kind of perfect because I finished my Sherlock binge, and The Imitation Game was just like months away, but it was during the festival circuit. Like it wasn't out for us, but it was premiering right. everywhere, like Telluride and Toronto and all that kind of stuff. So I was reading a lot about it, and because I had just watched Sherlock, I was really into Benedict Cumberbatch, so I was getting really, really, really excited for it in a way that it had been a while since I'd been that excited for a movie. Like, for years, my entertainment interests were more, like, TV-based. So suddenly I was, like, coming back into movies, and I was paying attention to the awards conversation. And I remember I worked at a movie theater at the time.
Yes.
Where I got my free movies. But The Imitation Game first went to a different theater. And I specifically went out of my way and willingly paid the dollars to go see it. Because I was, like, so excited. And it, like, made me feel all these kind of emotions. And I dragged, like, multiple friends to see it. Because it just made me so happy.
The Cumberbatch hold
wow.
is very
yeah.
strong.
Tight.
Yeah.
I kept insisting that it was a bit more than him, though, because, like, also it has people from, like, Downton Abbey.
Matthew Good.
Show. Matthew Good, who wasn't technically on Downton Abbey at the time, but, like, I was entranced by him. But there was Alan Leach, who's on Downton Abbey, and, I mean, Keira Knightley.
When Keira puts on a period outfit, you know you're in for a treat of some sort.
Every exactly. film of hers.
Right. When she's not in a period outfit, you're like, something's going on here. I don't feel safe.
I will say, I was watching this a couple of days ago, and Evan, my lovely boyfriend, came in and was like, what are you watching? I was like, The Imitation Game, and Keira Knightley showed up on screen, and he was like, oh my God, she really does only do period pieces. Yes. And I was like, yeah, dude. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Off the top of my head, I can only think of like one non-period piece.
Is it Never Let Me Go?
Oh, I forgot about that.
So there
one.
We go. We have two right there. I was only thinking of Love Actually.
Love Actually. I think there's three total.
There's more. There's, she just had a spy one come out like a year or
no,
two ago.
No, that's 2001. It's still a period piece. It's about like the early 2000s. Yeah.
Frickin' heck.
But there's this wow. one movie that she's in with Mark Ruffalo. I think it's called Begin Again.
Yes, it is Begin Again.
Yeah,
it's a musical.
The music
it's really
one.
Good.
Yeah. It's the music
it's
one.
Really good.
Yeah.
Bend It Like Beckham.
Oh,
Everest, Seeking an End for the Seeking an End for the Friend of the World.
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Actually, a fun movie. I really like that movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Laggies.
Laggies.
Oh, guys. Collateral Beauty, of course. The hit film.
God, I forgot she was in that.
We're
Domino?
All forgetting. Domino. We're a wild movie. Lastly, guys. Jack Ryan tried to recruit one, but that's not the one I'm talking about. You know, this movie takes place in one realm, the realm of Earth. We're forgetting that Keira Knightley was in the Four Realms. She was in the Four Realms, guys.
I would argue that that is a period piece.
It's some kind of piece is what it is.
It's a candy piece.
It's what it is.
It's a piece of work.
What a mess of a movie. Oh, it is a piece of
what
work.
What if there were four realms?
What if?
Imagine.
We'll never know.
Why not
and the
five?
The Nutcracker was involved somehow. They're going to turn yes. the Nutcracker Ballet into whatever that was.
Oh, God.
I gotta see that movie.
Yeah.
Her high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
I'm doing this voice. It's me, Keira Knightley.
No, Jordan did not make it to that one.
No, no. As someone who sees almost every movie, I did not famously see that movie.
That is crazy. I remember they were marketing that movie so hard. Yeah. It was everywhere. Yeah. I couldn't escape it.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I like Keira Knightley basically 95% of the time.
It's really hard for her to miss.
Yeah. I think it's Joe Wright. No.
Yes.
Yeah, it is Joe Wright. It has this amazing quote about her where he's like, Keira is one of the best actresses I've ever worked with. Every once in a while, you just have to tell her to close her mouth. And that's the only note you ever have to give her. And I was like,
great.
Damn.
She, hey, a working title girl. I will say our company loves her.
Yes.
I will say, okay, well, let's go around the room. This is fun. I love
let's
this.
Talk
it's
about
like,
Kira.
It's like we're having a sleepover. What's her your favorite performance of hers?
Jordan, you already know what it is.
I'm just asking.
It's Colette.
Rachel?
I knew you were going to say that. It is probably The Imitation Game, but I have a
Whoa!
Lot.
Rachel,
well, also, but I but love also you. Like but also like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Whoa! Okay. Okay.
Look.
Good answer.
Oh my God! Wait, no. Oh, I'm a fool. No, I'm a fool, and I'm so embarrassed of myself because it's Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
A good movie.
I mean, I would say Atonement.
It's
is
Atonement. Okay.
Atonement
it's
is
either
a very close
Atonement
second.
Or Pirate King Elizabeth Swann.
Yeah. So Pirates of the Caribbean answers. At World's End specifically.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
All
where
three
she
of them.
She has that look where she's standing and it's like.
And
rainy.
She's standing
the
and yeah.
Blown
and
back.
She has her sword. Yeah, it's
with
great.
The hat
it's,
and
yeah,
like
she's
the
never looked better. Yeah.
Look. Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
stab me.
A gay awakening for women all over the world.
So speaking of Colette.
Speaking of Colette. Did you watch Colette?
I watched Colette.
You watched Colette. That was one of the movies that was on the bracket.
I did. I shocking that that's your favorite. I do like. I think it's a really good performance. I feel like it's a lot more subtle though.
I think it's her best performance.
Yeah.
Like
it's a really good performance, but it's like not. I feel like it's a little less than like a Kira performance, capital P. You know what I mean?
It is very. It's,
like a
it's
like
quiet.
A Anna.
Anna Karenina.
Karenina. I love her in, and I really love that movie.
A great movie. Everyone was like, she was miscast in that. Incorrect.
False.
Keira Knightley is never miscast.
Absolutely not.
Never.
Well, unless
not
it's in like a normal, yeah, unless it's a set in present day. Yeah.
What did you think of Colette?
Okay, since we're here with Colette, well, let's hold on Colette.
We'll
hold on Colette.
Okay, we're holding. Let's see. We're so off the rails. Oh. I don't remember when I saw
it. I was going to say, how did you meet this film?
I don't remember when I saw it for the first time. I think I saw it in theaters. I think this was a Solomon family outing because it is a nice family-friendly movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you guys go see big brand-based movies. We go see indie
This I would say is not an indie film, but I respect.
This literally is an indie film.
With the Weinstein attachment, I don't want to say it's a big indie, but okay.
No,
okay.
No. Okay, wait. No, I
sure,
have to lay this out for you.
Yeah.
So at one point, Warner Brothers had the rights to the script because Leonardo DiCaprio wanted to play Alan Turing.
Right.
He didn't end up attaching. The rights reverted back to the writer. Black Bear, a small independent production company, bought the rights and agreed to finance the film alone for $14 million.
Okay.
They did the film. It premiered, or sorry, wait, that's incorrect. Yeah, principal
How
photography.
How many theaters did it open on?
Hang on.
Wait How many theaters did it open to?
Wait. Hang on. I need to make sure that I'm getting this right. Yes. Okay. It opened on 4 screens.
But then how many does it platform to?
It platforms to 2,500, okay. But it took them 3 months to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So here's what happened, is that it was
the
financed... Will you let me tell the story?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I just think you saying that this is a small indie feels like a wild card.
It is a small indie. It's an independent movie.
Okay,
it
it's an independent movie.
Financed and made independently, and then the Weinstein Company bought it after it was already completed to
as
come on
do,
as a distributor.
Yeah.
Right. But they didn't have any sway in making the actual movie. Now, you can say that they put up the P&A spend. That's totally fair. You can say that they marketed it with a giant Oscar push. That's totally fair. But this was the highest grossing independent film of 2014 and broke the record for highest independent film sale at
I will also say that this feels like the most indicative of a He Shall Not Be Named Oscars push movie.
A Weinstein Oscars push?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
This is 100%. The absolute like distilled of like everything that he would do to win like Oscars movies like with this movie.
It's crazy how many Oscars
this
thing was nominated for.
Yeah, I want to say it was like 8.
Insane.
Yeah, it was so many. Like the fact that the director who has like literally
told him,
barely directed anything was nominated for an Oscar for this is insane.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, which I don't even understand why to this day.
Yeah, like it's so crazy.
I agree.
Yeah, this is like it's such a good example of like the actual like producing power of like the Weinstein Company in particular.
To say terrible people.
Of course, but I don't think we should like, you know, skirt around the issue, which is that like, yes, this film got like such a huge awards push because of the production company that was behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
So,
I saw this movie not in a theater. I just rented it for catching up for the Oscars because I was like, what is this weird movie that has made a lot of money that stars Benedict Cumberbatch and everyone is like, it's fun.
So
and I watched it and that was it. And I had never thought about it until this episode.
I think about it often because my family really likes this movie, because it's like, it's you know, it really is sort of like, it's enjoyable. It's not super dry. It's pretty active. Like, the mm-hmm. story keeps moving. It's not too long. It's a really good family movie because there's nothing like untoward
actually
in it.
Here is a good point of conversation. You've just opened up the can of worms.
Yes.
Okay. So I agree. I think that it's a fine period piece. I think that it's a completely fine film. Yeah. Like, I don't have any faults with it. I mean, like, if you want to talk about, like, story or whatever, I think that the angle of this movie being a family movie does a disservice to Turing and his queerness. And I think it ultimately really hampers the movie in terms of, like, gay representation. And I think because they were really trying to make it a four-quadrant movie, and by, like, they take the most straight approach narratively possible, which does a disservice to him.
Yeah.
And it, like, was really hard for me to watch, knowing, like, the act. It's because then you get to, like, the point where he's, like, chemically castrated for, like, being a gay man, for, like, having gay sex. And you're, like, it's totally just, like, shoved to the side and, like, shunted. And I feel like that's sort of how so much of his queerness is sort of taken in this movie. And so I recently watched Colette and Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Oh, thank you.
Wow.
Which I finished this morning.
Good movie, right?
Great movie. Great which movie. I think, obviously, those two movies are also, like, I guess, like, indie plays. But what they do, and they're both about, like, a man and or, like, a woman who were, like, the defining person in their field who did, like, this incredible thing, but they portray their queerness up front and center, and they don't sort of shy away from it. And by doing that, it leads to such a more nuanced look at their life and ultimately, like, such stronger movies. Like, Colette is just, like, you want to see, like, Colette, like, have a relationship with a trans man?
Yeah.
Like, cool. Like, let's do that. And then Professor Marston's like, what if, like, we show a three, like, just a thruple, and just, like,
a
bondage,
beautiful poly and just, like, relationship all over the
happy
place. Yeah.
And but that at the same time, while also intricately showing, like, the rise and creation of, like, Wonder Woman, or, like, how Colette becomes, like, the most famous French author ever. And while, like, I get that this movie, Morton Tilden was like, we're approaching this to talk about, like, Turing's, like, creation, and I get that that's important. But I also think that if you're going to have a queer character like this, or you're going to do, like, a huge push about his queerness, like, you have to, like, have something. I'm not saying you have to have gay sex or whatever in it. I'm just, like, give him more credence.
Yes.
And so that's my thoughts.
I think those are very good thoughts. Worth noting that both Colette and Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman do have gay sex scenes in both of them.
Yes.
And they're both very good.
Hot.
Very hot. Yes. Very good. Also, I feel like Rachel would never mention this, so I have to mention it for her, is that Rachel won an Evie for a review that she wrote of Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. Which, if you're not in our Emerson College bubble, is, like, Emerson's version of an Oscar
that
or
rules.
An Emmy. Or in your case, a Pulitzer?
I don't really know, because the, like, writing awards were in the separate, like, practically, like, the Creative Arts Emmys.
Yeah.
Just completely separate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did. I felt bad because the announcer, when they announced it, they read the whole title of the review, which is so long.
Wait,
the movie itself
is
really long.
Can you please say the title?
Oh, I don't remember what it is. I'd have to, like,
I'm sure it's Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman is a sensitive portrayal of, like, one of history's best figures
along those lines. I might have made some, like, Wonder Woman pun, but, like, probably with it. But it was very long, so it was like they started reading it and I knew it was me, but they kept going. So I was just like, I can't stand yet because they're not done, but I'm, like, freaking out. So yeah,
that rules.
Yeah,
good movie.
Very
fuck.
Well, I'm so glad that you liked it.
Everything I watch, Marston is, like, slam dunk the best.
It's
that
so
movie
good.
Is amazing.
Yes.
What's her face?
Rebecca Hall.
One of the best performances I have seen in such a long time. How just, like, cutting she is.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah, step on me,
literally.
Rebecca Hall,
basically, like, the what's her face? Olive is basically just like, tie me up, Rebecca Hall. I will be your third.
Yeah, it's so good. That whole scene where she's like, is this what you actually want?
Yes.
Then
and she's
put your
like,
hands
yes.
behind your back.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I love when they're all picnicking and Olive's boyfriend is like, I know what you're doing. You're like rotting her brain. And they're both just like, I guess we are.
So what?
But like, what about it? Like, what are you going to do?
You can't pleasure your girlfriend. Right.
Like, you're not satisfying her the way that she needs to be satisfied.
I love
Bye,
that.
Boy.
I love that movie so much.
It's so good. That movie deserved more.
I'm so glad. This is beautiful.
It did. It was, I feel like, definitely underseen. And I remember watching it.
An Annapurna release.
Yeah, watching it as like a press screening in the middle of Boston. And it's like me, the one college kid, and then just like all the older men of Boston critics. And I'm just like, this movie's groovy.
What theater did you see it at?
Oh, AMC loves Boston Common, baby.
God, the classic.
We often invoke. I miss that theater so much.
Yes. I could not agree more. Okay, but I want to go back to your...
Sorry, I raised a lot of points.
You raised a lot of points that we now have to go through.
Yes.
So
wait,
oh my God.
Oh my God.
We could cover... Oh, so I have
we
this...
We both just discovered that.
I have this website called The Numbers, which like lets me check... all of the box office data, and we only cover films that hit 1,000 screens, and we just discovered that Professor Marston opened on 1,200 screens.
Let's go.
We are going to cover that.
Wow.
We're going to cover that.
That's
movie.
So cool.
That's so exciting. Okay, great.
Go us.
Going to put that in the in the vault. You brought up a lot of points,
I
Jordan.
Did.
I
yes.
think that we should talk about that.
I agree.
Because the plot of this movie is very simple, and we don't really need to
he creates
spend too much time
the
on
computer.
It. It's a fun time, though. I think the script is very well written. It won
Graham
Best Adapted Screenplay at the
Blacklist.
Oscars. Yep. It's a Blacklist script.
Yes.
It's good. I really like it.
There is one sequence that I really liked where it's the... where they're like running or doing something, like when he like to figure like when they figure it out and they're all like rushing across the field and they're like, I really liked that sequence.
And they go and they plug in the
it's so well like put together with like the music going and the speed of it, and you can feel the urgency of them going and how all of a sudden it goes silent when the machine stops. It gives me chills every time.
Yes, that is definitely, I think, the best scene of the movie.
Yeah,
it's very well directed.
Did the score, right?
Yes.
Yeah. My king.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with the score. I listen to it all. I mean, he's like probably my favorite composer in general.
He's the best.
So like, I listen to it all the time because it's just very soothing and it feels very like good working music.
Yes.
This is, I think, such a good British movie where it's just like kind of relaxed and you're like hanging out with them. There's like some stress, but you're like.
They're
going to
figure it out. They've got this.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, so as we were saying.
You brought up a lot of points.
I brought up some points.
I am not disagreeing with you on any of these points. The one thing I would just like to say, and like this is something that we always talk about on the podcast, is like, what do you sacrifice in terms of box office for representation? Like, how do you balance essentially how much money your movie is going to make with what you're putting on screen? You mentioned both Colette and Professor Marston, two movies that I obviously approve of and care about very deeply. Both of those movies barely got released and didn't get any awards attention. And I really do think that...
Well, Marston had a release.
It had a release, but like this thing, it was in theaters for like 4 weeks.
Right.
It was never going to go anywhere. I think like the main difference, if you really want to like be harsh and look at it, between those two movies and The Imitation Game, because like... They're, you know, especially Colette is like dealing with prestige actors, is the portrayal of
queerness
on screen.
Yes.
And it's like, this is a really good example of like, if you want to get a little bit of representation out into the world, you might have to sacrifice a lot of representation to get there in the first place.
I understand. Yes.
Yeah.
It's just tricky because I feel like so much of this movie that they like with the Weinstein of it all and with the post and the marketing, like it became they weaponized this movie essentially as like an LGBTQ, like they tried to be like, this is like a defining queer movie, and like obviously like the Turing law gets passed because of like this huge petition that gets started because of this movie.
Yeah,
but the playing of this movie being such an important gay movie feels like icky to me when they like don't give his like queer love like any like semblance, or like they don't give like his like actual like romantic entanglements like any time or like service, where I'm just like, and then it's like with his character, it just because he obviously like they, it just feels like there's such an accurate like creation of like him and like the portrayal of him, like for him as a character, and like sort of putting him on the spectrum even though he wasn't really on the spectrum, and making him like this really like quiet interior guy with no friends, even though like he had friends and like had a sense of humor. So it's just like they're like, we can't have a gay person on screen who doesn't fit like the wicked outsider perspective. You know what I mean? Like if he was like a normal guy, but they're like, we can't have a gay person be like a normal person.
Right.
Which is like,
right.
Why?
Yeah. You know? No.
Like, well, yeah. Because I think like to your point about how they suddenly made it after it was released about into this big monumental thing. I feel like there's some aspect of when they were making the movie, everyone involved was very much focused on like, his achievements portion, because obviously most of the movie focuses on the breaking of the Enigma code. And when you hear them talk about it, like I've watched, you know, special features and I've watched interviews and all that stuff. And they talk about like this great man, he did this with the computers and with the war. And then so they must have focused on that more. And then as it was released, they realized that they can push the angle up more, you know, make it like, you know, they see what they have there and they recognize that this is an area of cinema that hasn't really been tapped into yet on a mainstream level. So it felt very revolutionary at the time, but that definitely wasn't what they were going for. Even though that probably was what they should have been, they should have done more with it, but it wasn't there in the actual making.
Yeah, no, I think that that's like super insightful. And I think further ties into the fact that like, so often, like too often, the sort of queer angle of films does end up becoming like a marketing ploy,
right?
And being like, well, this is a gay movie, so it's therefore it's important, even if the gay aspect of the movie is less than ideal. I mean, literally, The Danish Girl is the year after this.
Well, I feel like this also
or the same year. The year before?
I think it's the year
15.
After.
Yeah, it's 15.
It's the year after. Yeah.
It just feels like this, like, I feel like the relationship you get the most out of is like him and Kira. And I feel like if this was like released a la like Brokeback, it would have had like the post, like the picture, you know, like the Brokeback Oscar campaign photos where it's like
the straight people.
Like the straight people, like and like playing it as like a straight thing. I feel like it would have had like Cumberbatch and Knightley like on the poster, and like all of the marketing would have been like framed around like the two of them. You know what I mean? Like that's like the vibe I got.
One of my favorite actually like aspects of just the film itself, if we're just like talking about the film, is that there is never anything romantic between them, even when Joan is like, well, I'd sort of, you know, figured, but I still want to be with you. I just, I really do love everything about their relationship. Yeah, Rachel's nodding.
I think it's always such a beautiful, it's a beautiful show of friendship, and that it's more of like, they respect each other's minds. And I think it's kind of the point of like, it's that side of queerness that's like, you're not quite conforming with them. Like, obviously Joan is, for all intents and purposes, a straight woman, but she doesn't conform to the standard like woman role of the time. She doesn't want that sort of thing. So it makes sense that as a result, she would kind of slot in with Alan in that sense, and that she would want it. And I think it's so cute how she understands how he's not quite there. So she like kind of coaxes him along, but also is like, hey, you should maybe pay attention to this more, do this more. Like it's, they're both helping each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that like there was a little bit of pushback, like you were saying, Jordan, in that like how Keira Knightley was the second lead of this movie and like they really built up their relationship. But I think that whether or not you want to talk about how like the marketing pushed it, she's obviously like the other actor who gets like the Oscar nom. If you look at the actual like text of the movie and just like the story, it is very much like there was a nice friendship between, like Rachel was saying, these two people that couldn't really like slot into what society expected of them.
Yeah.
And like thought that for a while they could be like lifetime companions.
Sure.
Because they like didn't want to have to fake it, mm-hmm. essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a Lavender Marriage, except that Keira Knightley is straight,
right,
in this movie. I've always really appreciated that about the movie, that there's not a scene where she's like, wait, what? I thought you were in love with me. Like she's kind of like, yeah, you weren't really fooling anybody, but like, I just respect you and like, I can see this working. I don't know. I've always liked that.
Yeah.
No, I
respect that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that it is like so, so interesting to be like, let's look at this movie as a film, and then let's look at this movie as like a piece of media for the Oscars. Because like,
yeah,
you know,
because it's like, I think ultimately, like, it's, I obviously, like Rachel, like, loves it. I don't want to like hate on it or anything.
No,
I don't
want to like hate.
I like
hate
don't
on
hate
it.
The movie. I think it's like just like a normal biopic. Like ultimately, I'm like, it just like having just watched like three biopics in a row of like similar ilk. It just like sort of is just like the most paint by numbers sort of like story.
There's not a lot of surprises.
Right. And like where Colette, I texted you about Colette, where I'm like, the first half of Colette feels like a normal biopic, and then it like really pivots when, and I love the second half of it because it like is like, it is still a biopic, but it like, it becomes something more.
Yeah.
And like her exploring like her queerness and her relationships. And I really love that. And like Marston of the three feels so, I'm sorry that I'm like using one
no,
of these
this
three,
is, I'm obsessed with this.
But it's
this
like,
is great for
that
both of us.
Feels like, while it necessarily like it doesn't have the most stylistic flair or anything, it is the most interesting approach to a biopic, even though I'm still like flawed with that structure itself, like with the whole Connie Britton stuff, where I'm like, you don't necessarily need the framework of Connie Britton in this.
Right.
But it's just to give you this sort of, as this movie has as well.
This
like,
movie also has
we
a
We have to have
us.
A structuring framework, yes, when there's some sort of person who was like an outsider or whatever, you know?
Biopics are very, very common. I would say that this is one in a long line of them.
Oh, for sure.
I think like it's just, it's really interesting because like the Oscars go for this shit again and again and
it's
again.
Like catnip.
Yeah. I don't think that The Imitation Game is like a particularly egregious example.
I would say it's like Bohemian Rhapsody
is
like
a particularly egregious example. Yeah.
Green Book, which I've thought about somewhat like this, because I think the thing is that for me personally, I don't always drift to biopics. Like, I watch them and I'll enjoy them because they'll tell me things I don't always know, but I, as a general rule for my preferences, I like the fictionalized stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that the problem a lot of them fall into is that they're very formulaic. They follow the basic thing, and it's very hard, I think, to break out. Like, I was trying to think of examples of like biopics that maybe pushed the bounds of it, and I could only come up with like Rocket Man and like I, Tonya.
Yeah,
as like trying,
what's
something
taking
like
an approach. Yeah,
yeah.
Like, where they're like, I have a take on this life.
Yeah,
where it's like,
yeah,
my
exactly.
style is gonna like emulate how their behavior was, which is why I feel like those movies work, because it's like, for I, Tonya, it's like chaos and you're like, who the fuck is telling the truth here? And then for Rocket Man, it's like, of course an Elton John biopic would be a flamboyant musical where people float. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So I feel like this was very, and it's, you know, it is pretty, they try to break it up by having the like three different timelines, which I think is sometimes, now it's a device that gets used too often, I think, but
yeah,
I feel like for the most part, it works out with The Imitation Game, even if the younger stuff kind of doesn't always match, or it feels kind of forced.
Yeah.
I would have loved if it was like you paralleled that relationship with like a modern relationship that he was having in conjunction with
really
like
good.
The creation of like the machine or something, because it's like the whole like love that he had is like fascinating, while it's like him naming it or whatever is like not true or whatever. Like, but there is like a way to do something with that. You know what I mean? I'm just like, it doesn't emotionally pay off as much as I like wanted it to.
It's just basically, what if a cute boy taught you how to code?
Right.
But then
right.
he mysteriously died of tuberculosis.
Right.
Dies. You find out from your headmaster.
Right. Like, and obviously I think that, now let me remember the name of that actor.
It's the boy from The End of the Fucking World.
Yeah. And also from Black Mirror.
Yes.
See, all the Brits coming together.
Truly, they all like have their slot and play it so well. Like Matthew Good.
Alex Lothar.
True. Good performance.
Good performance.
Yeah, he did a good job imitating.
Imitating.
So much. What is queerness if not imitating, you know?
Ew. Yeah. I hope not. Queerness is about individuality.
No, I know. I was trying to think of it in there.
And then
it just fucked it
all up. No, I agree. I think that for the most part, this is a very smoothly run movie, but sometimes you want something to be like a little more messy at service of like total creative like excitement. Like, it is paint by numbers, like, but it's,
and I have to,
it gets,
I have
you there.
To wonder if part of it comes from the directing.
Yes.
Because from what I've read about the like making of this is that it was the producers and the screenwriter, Graham Moore, they were really passionate about making a movie about Alan Turing, so they really wanted it. And then Morton Tilden came in like afterwards. And I have to wonder how much of, like, then he was able to, like, if he had any sort of, not to say he wasn't passionate about it, because I'm sure he must have felt strongly enough to direct it, but enough to then be like, I'm deeply inspired by this. I'm going to make it something special.
Yes. I would be interested for, because Graham hasn't literally done, like, anything since then, which, so I'm, like, fascinated to see sort of what his next pivot would be, because I know he had, like, a book or something that he was writing or things like, because I think he's a novelist, but I'm like, screenplay wise I feel like it would be like indicative of whatever his next thing is, if for that specific question of like, was this a script thing or was this a directing thing? But because it is literally like his only movie, you like don't know.
It's crazy. Like, this was his only screenplay and made it to the blacklist, and then he won an Oscar for it,
right? I know. And he just doesn't do anything after.
He took that statue and he was I'm good.
But he was still like I actually met him. Like, there was a Q&A. There was a Q&A at Emerson, our school.
Oh, shit.
That were, like, because he was like, a guest for the master's screenwriting program, and they held, like, a screening, and he was there, so I went down with my mom, and, like, he's still, like, clearly is within that realm, because he was talking about, like, the process and the writing and all of it, but it was cool. I asked a question and I don't remember what it was.
I'm sure he loved you.
Yeah.
As long as you asked a question and not more of a comment, right, actually, if you were like, you're good.
I have a thought about this, actually.
I actually have a pitch for you.
Do you want to take my screenplay?
Wait, okay, this is a crazy Oscars also. This year is nuts.
I remember this year because so vividly.
I forgot that this was actually the same year as The Theory of Everything, mm-hmm. and that The Danish Girl was like the year after.
This was
so
a famously bad Oscars year, I want to say, where like a lot of movies that should have won, like The Grand Budapest Hotel, did not get the wins that they deserved.
Yeah, Grand Budapest Hotel walks away with The Grand Budapest Hotel. Go ahead.
Didn't Desplat beat himself? Like, he was nominated for both in Imitation Game in score. Like,
he
and
did
Grand
beat himself.
Yeah. He like beat himself.
He that's won so cool. for the Grand Budapest Hotel, which is great. Obviously, that score is so iconic. Good for Desplat. Yeah. So proud of him. Also, that rarely happens. Usually, if you're double nommed, you split the vote. So very proud of him. The Grand Budapest Hotel also walked away with Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Film Editing, and Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Costume Design, and Production Design.
Good.
There we go. It was sort of like, I remember, I think it was Ayana talked to us about when the Grand Budapest Hotel was winning all the craft awards, and she was like, it's going to happen.
Yep.
And then
it doesn't happen.
It does not get anything in like the higher up category.
Which is so upsetting.
Yeah.
Like, this is the year that Foxcatcher gets like one or two noms, but like it should have had like the nom. Like, this is the year that Channing gets snubbed from Best Actor.
For
Foxcatcher, which is where
Steve Carell got nominated.
Steve Carell gets nominated alongside Mark Ruffalo, too, I want to say, right?
Mark Ruffalo's just in Mark. Best Supporting. Nope.
Right, yeah.
Carell got it.
Yeah, because like everyone was like, the push is going to be for Channing. This is going to be Channing's year.
Channing's
and then Channing doesn't
Oscar.
Get it,
so
which is
rude.
So upsetting.
So rude. And this is like Eddie Redmayne beats Michael Keaton for Best Actor.
I had Keaton down on my like ballot. It was the first year I made an Oscar ballot because I had watched most of the nominees because I was inspired by The Imitation Game. So I like was so prepared and I was really like, it's going to be Keaton. And I like told my friend that we were watching it together and they were like, Eddie Redmayne. I was like,
oh,
like it's insane that Eddie Redmayne beat Michael Keaton, especially because I mean, look, it's very good that he didn't win for The Danish Girl, but like the next year is The Danish Girl and everyone's like, oh my god, like,
I will
it's
say,
the
honestly,
Redmayne performance.
I like The Theory of Everything, but
I would say I think
the score for that movie is astounding. Ooh.
Score is beautiful.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
This is the J.K. Simmons year, though.
Yes.
Which famously also features Robert Duvall in The Judge.
He was nominated for an Oscar for The Judge.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
A movie that exists.
Yeah.
A movie that just exists. And Patricia Arquette wins for Boyhood, which is like very random. Beats out Miss Keira Knightley.
It's just such a weird year because like people were also, as we said, like Nightcrawler's there and you're like, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Where's
Oscar
the Jake
where?
Gyllenhaal?
Riz Ahmed, Oscar where?
Where's the Oscar nom? Right. Where's the... Although I think it actually did get a screenplay nom. I believe.
It did.
Yes, it did. But it didn't win, which is very rude. Anyway, it's a weird year.
Weird Oscars
Meryl year. Streep is nominated for Into the Woods. This is the Gone Girl year, and it's barely nominated
right.
for anything.
That's exactly.
It is deeply, deeply upsetting.
Was it... Did was that the Birdman was the one that came yes. with Best Picture though, right?
Yeah, it was the because it was basically like I think a weird year where the Oscars were still sort of clinging to the old like they there was enough so they were large enough so they were like we're gonna get some like interesting box office big blockbusters in here but they were still sort of clinging to like the old guard so like a lot of the noms yeah. you go through are like these classic sort of Oscar play movies versus like as we were saying like with the Gone Girl which. Feels more edgy or like a little more risque for them right. to nom.
Like Gone Girl yeah. gets nothing.
Right, like Amy Dunn is coming to kill you now.
I mean, obviously Rosamund Pike gets the nom, which is amazing, but like why there's should not no win? Best picture, there's no best director, there's no best adaptive screenplay, which is actually
insane.
Disrespectful.
Yeah. Even for Ben, his yeah. best performance.
And guess what? This is the same year as Inherent Vice, which is also snubbed all over the fucking place. And this is when you have American Sniper running away with like a lot of the buzz. It's just it's a whole
yeah,
disaster.
That was
it's a disaster.
Really big. Yeah, yeah, I do remember that. That was
talk about a movie that made an insane amount of money. Oh
that
my god.
That was when I was working at the theater, it was like the biggest movie of the month and I was deeply wow. confused about yeah. why we had so many people coming in for it. I was confused and I ended up accidentally seeing it twice.
I was just saying,
still never seen
I
it.
I have still never
still
seen
never
it either.
Seen it.
Oh my god.
I have seen it twice.
You saw the baby?
And, yeah. And, well, did I see the baby or did I see a monstrosity?
A robot? Renessa May is pissed.
Oh my god.
Is that how you pronounce her name? Renessa May?
Renessa May? Yeah. Renessa May. Very
I was thinking
good.
Of other tortured, horror, terrifying babies.
Renessa May, played by Mackenzie Foy, featured in The Nutcracker and The Four Realms,
wow,
starring Keira Knightley.
Nice.
Look at that. Look at that. Proof that everyone in Hollywood is connected.
Amen. Speaking of this movie.
Speaking of this movie.
I think Matthew Good is really fun in it.
Love Matthew
Because I think
Good.
Matthew Good gives the Matthew same performance Good. In everything.
But
I love
he
him.
Always delivers.
But he always delivers. But like him in The Crown specifically, I like am obsessed with. And I wish that yeah. this movie had like a little bit more of Matthew Good in The Crown energy, which is like he is so bi in The Crown that like you feel that like he sort of wants to. To itch because I feel like okay
what
I
where just, are you going that, with this Gustafson
let me go where I'm going I feel that Matthew Good and Benedict Cumberbatch were looking at each other in a way that felt a little sexual
I agree
thank you
and Rachel.
I feel like I their relation that felt like a string that was like dangled there where I was like I kept thinking that they were gonna hook up and that they never did I was like interesting because like they had chemistry because he was of them all the guys he was like the most combative
yes.
and he was like
yeah.
the most like Turing you're not doing your job or whatever
you're nothing
right and the so and like having line. Just literally binged The Crown I was like oh Matthew Good like fucks men and women great he's gonna be like sleeping with Benedict in this but no
there's
but,
that part there's that part where Alan and Joan are having like a picnic and
yeah.
he just walks up and he's like if you do this with the rotors it'll be better and then he grabs his sandwich and like takes a bite and he's like that's mine and he was just like you said you don't like sandwiches I was like
right
what do you do? I think it's just Matthew Good is so like effortlessly charming mm-hmm.
yes.
he just exudes like that perfect British charm and it makes me weak
yes
that's it.
And you know he's trying to fuck no matter
right.
how
absolutely.
You swing it
he's like, the other side of the British actor coin so it's like you have Rory Kinnear and then you have Matthew Good, and there's like no in between. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
For sure.
Right?
Lots of pasty white men.
Yes.
Up
yes.
in here.
Oh, so many.
I think it's interesting. All of the there's maybe one too many dynamics between all of the group people because mm-hmm. I do want more between Hugh and Alan, aka Matthew Good and Benedict Cumberbatch, because there's a little too much between Alan Leach, who plays John Kane. Karen Cross,
yeah.
that guy
yeah.
who turns
the
out
Russian
to be
spy.
The double agent, but he's the one who suspects Turing of being gay.
Doesn't suspect. He's
he,
just
he
like
knows.
Yeah.
He's like, I know that you're a homosexual.
Yeah.
So I think that like it's interesting because they have their relationship, but then you also have the Matthew Good relationship, and you wish that like there was, like you were saying, Jordan, if you want to pick a ship, right, you wish that they would commit,
right,
to one of the ships. I totally agree with, like, the fact that Alan Turing should have some sort of, like, queer relationship in quote-unquote modern day, in, like, this Enigma, either in the Enigma storyline or in the modern storyline that doesn't involve, like, a male prostitute, basically. Because it does feel, obviously, like, upsetting that it's like, I had a crush on a boy when I was in school one time, and since then I've just repressed the shit out of myself.
And now I'm being chemically castrated. You're just like, oh, okay.
Damn. Yeah. It is also, I think, like, it sort of goes, and maybe I think, like, a lot of it is based on the fact that, like, watching this is very similar to watching Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock, and so you're playing off of that. But they both have the same energy where you're like, wait, you are a sexual being? That's weird. Wow, sorry. Sorry.
That's just him in general.
Solomon,
that's
so good.
Rachel, I'm sure you remember all of the business around Sherlock in-universe with the other characters being like, Sherlock,
like,
you've had sex? Like, well, what are you talking about?
I agree, because it's like with Rachel McAdams and Doctor Strange, you're like, you're not going to actually hook up, right?
Well,
it feels weird.
I would say that's more of a Marvel problem than a Benedict Cumberbatch problem.
But no, I agree, though. I agree with you. Benedict doesn't feel like a sexual being.
I don't think that it's necessarily like a failing as an actor or anything
like
that.
It's his characters.
It's the character.
Yeah. It's his characters. And I think sometimes he can, like, pull it. Because I do think there are moments where he's as Sherlock, or just all when he's a Sherlock, where I'm like, you are very attractive right now, and it's partially because of the character he puts on,
right?
So then it's like, when, but it's any other kind of character that he ends up in, and it just doesn't feel right, either because he is too much of, like, a, I don't want to say know-it-all because that sounds bad, I feel,
but,
like, but, like,
no, but he's very, like, standoffish.
He's very, yeah, he's the intellectual, I know I am smarter than you, so I'm going to be in my own bubble, and that's how I'm just going to exist. And no one else can penetrate the bubble. And
no one else is worthy. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, I think that specifically in this movie, it's one of the scenes with Rory Kinnear in quote unquote modern day where why are you smiling?
Anytime I think of Rory Kinnear, it just makes
just
me,
like,
smile.
But it's when he's interrogating Alan Turing, and Alan Turing is like, oh, because I, you know, paid some guy to touch my penis, now all of a sudden, like, you're going to say that I'm a terrible person or whatever. Right. And I was like, it does feel weird that he would be the type of person that, like, hires male prostitutes.
Right, right.
It just doesn't feel like that is the sort of queer relationship that he would gravitate towards.
Right, he would have, like, a lover for life.
He would have a long-term companion who understands him.
Right.
Yeah, but, and then, like, as a result, with him saying it just like that, saying, like, hired a man to touch my penis, it feels so awkward. And, like, there are moments where I feel like the dialogue that, like, explicitly references his being gay, it, like, comes across so heteronormative. Old-fashioned and, like, awkward.
It's like a straight person's POV on queerness. They're like, how, like, what would a gay person say, you know?
Like,
what was the other one? Oh, yeah, where he says, like, I've had affairs with men. Like, the way it was, like, delivered with the rest of the sentence, he said that, and I was like, it doesn't ring true, necessarily.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because I feel like he can play it Sherlock.
It's not really his fault. It's not really, I don't think that it's on him. I think it's probably on, like, the writing and the directing a little bit. But even, like, there's even the homophobia parts of it, like when the detectives are like, "Gah, that's disgusting with another man." I'm like, okay, let's calm down.
Right.
Maybe.
Summer.
Like, we get it.
Yeah. Honestly, the person who does the best, like, interacting with him about his, like, queerness is Mark Strong, where it's just like, he's just like, oh, I know everything, and, like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mark Strong being just always the omnipotent guy. Just like, yeah, I know everything.
So good. And he's actually really good in this movie. And it's also weird because he has hair. And I'm like, I don't like that you have hair, though.
Mark Strong with hair.
And this feels uncomfortable. I know you're in a wig, sir.
It is a really strong cast. It's crazy because this is like $14 million is like right down the middle mid-budget movie. But it is crazy to think of, like, this is a lot of famous people to be in a $14 million movie.
Yeah. Well, it must have been like Benedict. Is this his first big one? Or
well,
when's 12
Sherlock
years
is already going.
Year before is 12 Years a Slave.
It's like the first movie that he was, like, leading.
Yes.
Right, because he's in, like, The Hobbit as, like, Smaug.
Yeah, and he was in, like, before, like, 2013 was a big year for him because he had, like, August Osage County, and he had the fifth estate, which mm-hmm. I guess is kind of leading it, but The Imitation Game was, like, bigger and, like, pushed more, so that it felt more like a leading man coming forth mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah,
and he gets the Oscar nom, obviously, because it's, like, the year before he is in 12 Years a Slave, which wins Best Picture, and right. I remember me being, like, I don't know if you remember this Tumblr controversy, but I remember there was, like, a bunch of people that were, like, how the fuck did Benedict Cumberbatch manage to get his way on stage during the 12 Years a Slave Oscar win? And people were like, he's in the movie, like, calm down.
Oh,
people were like, honestly, this is such a great representation of, like, why people shouldn't be taking other people's spaces and, like, why you should respect your boundaries. And then people were like, he's in the movie.
He's in it. Like, wow. Why do you think Brad Pitt was on stage?
Right. Like, the whole Brad cast produced is up it, there. Honey. Oh, yeah, my God. A whole mess.
Looking at his filmography right now, it's just so fascinating how many, like, World War One and Two movies he does, because it's like he pops up in 1917 and you're like, okay. But then he's also in, like, this War Horse, Tinker Tailor, which is not like that. But then he also has, like, oh my God, I just had flagged it. Where'd it go? The Current War. It's just like he's in these, like, period movies where I'm like, he's not a big role, but he's still in it. I'm like, why are you in this, Benedict?
Yeah, I mean,
1917 is the funniest.
1917 is like a jump scare.
Collection of, like, it's like the collection of, like, your biggest names in, like, Britain today, and they'll get 60 seconds of screen time.
Yep. When Andrew Scott appeared, I was like, oh my God, right? Like, what is this?
I forgot about him, so he appeared and I was like, what is this?
Yes. Do you guys want to know a secret really good Benedict Cumberbatch performance that is actually so good that it kind of makes the movie hard to watch because it's so unnerving? Freaking Atonement.
He's so, oh, yeah.
He oh my is God, it's so true.
So upsetting.
Everyone is so good in that movie.
That movie is so good.
It's a perfect movie.
I always forget every time I go to watch that movie, I'm like, a nice period drama that makes me a little sad. And then I forget how deeply unnerving the first
how upsetting
act
it,
of
is.
It is. Yeah.
It's a traumatizing film.
It's traumatizing. I love that movie.
Real quick thing about Atonement.
Please.
First, like,
please.
Rush with it. Was I read it in high school. We had to read it in English class. So naturally, we were going to watch the movie. And we watched, like, the first half during class. And then we, like, went home for the day. And then we never finished it.
No.
And I was, like, I was sitting there class after class on edge because I was like, why'd you stop? Because they didn't even, I don't even think we hit, like, the turning point. Like,
right.
Where James McAvoy is, like, arrested. I don't even think we reached that point.
Oh,
we
my
only watched, like, the beginning.
God.
Did you get to the library sex scene?
That's what I was going to ask.
You know what? I feel like we might have, but I think my teacher was like,
your teacher was like, we can't watch this anymore.
That was, like, my first.
So, like,
sorry, no, go. Yeah.
No, that was it. Like, that was
that book. I read that book.
Yeah.
Right at the age where I was, like, starting to know what sex was.
Right.
And that was, like, my awakening book. And, like, book before movie. I hadn't seen the movie. So I was reading and I was like, oh my God, like, sex is crazy. Sorry. But no, that was, like, insane. And then I watched the movie and then I was like, what am I feeling?
What is this?
This is crazy. I am confused. You're in a nightly screen dress. Oh my God.
That is one of my favorite sex scenes.
It's the hottest sex scene.
We've talked about a lot of sex scenes on this episode. So we talked about Colette. We talked about Professor Marston. That is a great sex scene.
All good ones.
I'm apparently the only one that hasn't read the Atonement book. Because when I watched the movie, I was so shook by the ending. It was crazy. Like, it blew me away.
It's insane.
Yeah. The book is really good. I really enjoyed it because I remember that was the year where I kind of stopped reading some of the books at some point in my senior year English class. But that one I, like, actively really loved reading, and it was like happy to do, like, homework for it.
You're like, I'll do that report, sure.
I'll sit and read it just fine. Am I ignoring my other homework? Well, yeah, but I'm doing English, so it's fine.
You're like, put a green dress. Let me tell you.
Yeah, you know, it's a good time. There's a lot good British cinema. I know that we're all fans of British cinema, whether from work or from life.
Literally, when your job is British cinema. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that, like, good British period pieces were something that, like, my family could watch without anything,
right,
like, any red flags popping up. And we didn't watch, I mean, everyone knows this, we didn't watch a lot of the like classic family movies that you would think of, right, or even like growing up, any of that sort of like IP based stuff. So to me, period pieces were like probably the most consistent thing that I watched.
They were your superheroes. So yeah, you were like, basically. Pride and Prejudice, you are my Avengers.
Yeah. I mean, Pride and Prejudice is the Avengers.
You're like, get the women Pride together.
Slaps. Yes. Okay, let's see. What this else movie? Do we need to talk about? I think we should...
like Benedict riding the bike. I think that's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I like when he goes running. He has a very weird run.
Like, he doesn't look like he should be doing, like, physical activities. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, you don't look like you either A, fit on the bike, or B, have a running form.
Yes.
He like took it seriously though, because like I think that like Alan Turing really was a runner in his time, so like Benedict really committed and tried to like train to get the proper, like, he wore, like, I think he described the shoes once that he had to wear, and part of me was like, they look so uncomfortable.
They're probably like, yeah, if they're period shoes, they're like flat and have zero like help for your feet.
Yeah. I was like, are you hurting yourself by doing this? Like, is this a good idea?
He's like, I must feel the queer experience. I must put myself in pain.
I have to be in the mindset. I mean, we have barely talked about, like, the actual plot of the movie, which is Cracking Enigma. But that's, like, and I think you can really tell that the creatives, like, were passionate about that specific aspect. Because I think that, first of all, I love anything that involves, like, code cracking or, like, fun shit like that. Like, it's awesome. So puzzles, anything sort of twisty, churvy. No, I'm gonna stop talking, but I think that is the part of the movie that has the most energy running through it, and like we talked about that really great sequence when they finally figure out,
because like the girl at the bar,
Tuppence Middleton,
great performance
of Sense8, also the most British
name,
the most British name ever.
Yeah, pretty much.
There is no.
She puts in her one scene, and she's wonderful. She flirts with Matthew Good and causes me a lot of stress.
Yeah,
between the two of them.
You're like, who am I supposed to be attracted to?
Between that and when Matthew Good flirts with Keira Knightley, I think I wrote in my notes, I'm quaking.
Matthew Good needs to calm his shit immediately.
Matthew Good, just too sexual of
just
a being.
Too sexy.
Yeah,
too sexy.
It's true.
I love Tuppence Middleton. She is in Sense8. She is really good. She has big
parts.
What else
is she in?
She has been in Jupiter Ascending. She's Mank.
Right.
She is his wife in Mank.
Movie you love.
Yeah, which is, I don't like that movie. which is weird because she's like 30.
20 years younger than him, yeah.
But I think she's awesome. She's really fucking good in Sense8. Like, she's really, really good. And I can't believe that she hasn't been in more stuff. Like, that should have totally made her.
Here's the fun thing. She was in the Downton Abbey movie that came out a couple years ago. Oh. And her kind of love interest was Alan Leach.
That movie made so much money.
All British people.
So much. So much.
They're making a sequel, right? A theatrical sequel?
They sure are.
Downton Abbey's.
It was gonna come out at Christmas, but they bumped it to March.
Boo.
I wonder why. Was there something that like caused a lot of movies to have delays?
I don't know. There's something going on.
You know, it might be a little hard to make some movies right now with arguably some older cast members.
This is true.
They're like,
very
okay,
true.
We can't actually shoot because everyone could die.
We can't risk Maggie Smith.
Honestly, yeah. Protect the dame at all costs.
It's probably...
You're like, Maggie, we're going to shoot all of your stuff on a green screen in an isolated...
We're going to put you in a bubble. I mean, we can't risk it, you know? It's totally fair.
She's the best. No.
But what I was saying about the Enigma stuff is that, like, it's very fun, and I like them trying to figure out how to crack the code. I know that it is, like, literally the most, like, basic screenwrite-y thing, but I love the scene when Keira Knightley is like, I'm the only woman, and I finished in 6 minutes. Like,
oh, I love that.
5 minutes.
It's like,
sorry.
Feminism?
It's so, it's...
It's the most
on
the nose.
I can see them serving it to me. Yes.
Like, yeah, but, very on the nose, but it feels so fun.
Well, that's like,
it
again,
still gets me.
It's like Colette with the first half where I'm like, oh my God, yawn. Like, we've seen like this most base feminism. And then second part where I'm just like, yes, it's like you've big brain like feminism.
Dude, as soon as they start trying to fuck the same woman, it's over.
It's great. Yeah. Well, even like in Marston, it's literally a Marston cast as well. But like when they're both they both are like, she's like, you want to fuck her? And he's like, yeah, and she's like, okay, go for it. But then she's also realizing, wait, I want to fuck her too.
Okay, we can't talk about Marston too much now that we discovered that we can do an episode. Yeah. Rachel, you're preemptively invited back.
A good movie.
Oh my God. I would love that. I've been looking for an excuse to rewatch it.
Isn't it wild that in this movie, that in Bohemian Rhapsody, the Paul in that is like, Freddie, you're gay. And then in this one, he's also like, Alan, you're gay. And how he's doing like the exact same thing in both movies.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
My boy, Alan Leach.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorites from Downton Abbey. So I just like. When I saw this movie, I was like, oh, Benedict. And then he appeared, and I was like, oh, my God, it's you. I was so excited.
Graced by your face.
I know. I was like, wow.
Speaking to your thing that you brought up.
Yes.
With the machine.
The Enigma.
I think that this movie would have worked 12 times better if they had picked a timeline. And I think that I agree with that with most biopics, is that I think the most... strong, like the biopics that work the best, I think, are the ones that are the most focused on like an event and just are about like a moment in someone's life versus like their life. And like this movie sort of is about just the Enigma, but like by sandwiching it with the other two timelines, it like spreads it a little thin, you know?
Yes.
So I feel like if it was just the Enigma, I feel like you could have even skirted some of the issues that we're also then having about the queerness. I think by making it so much about his whole life, you then raise those flags.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was just honed in on like, we're gonna have like this like 2 week period about like the founding of the Enigma, you know,
it would be very like extremely sort of like one room. And I think that that could be cool. It could be like kind of cool and frenetic, and you would have like a really intense ticking clock. But I also totally understand why they wouldn't do that. It's right. It's riskier, and it's kind of like a 12 Angry Men scenario where it's like we're stuck in this room trying to crack this
thing.
That would
rule.
Yeah.
I literally just rewatched that movie too, and that movie is so good.
Yeah.
Because I bet you could show like an interesting kind of progression of time. Like they start out, their workspace is very neat and tidy, and you watch as it progressively gets more cluttered as they get more frustrated, as they move around and stuff, and how like the tensions are rising with each day that passes when they don't do it.
Yeah.
So, and then you would kind of have two, you could make it, you have the second location with Christopher.
Yeah. I mean, the machine is great. I love that it's like this giant thing that they just have to. That must have been so fun to act with.
I know. That's what I love. Like the part where they're solving it and they're all just running and the energy is high and they like know exactly what to do. So they like run around and they're like putting the bits in. I'm like, man, I just want to mess around with that. It's a great prop.
It is like this massive thing. And I even like when it's like deconstructed in his apartment at the end and like all of these little pieces. It's very nice. The production design in this movie, I think is great.
How did you like the way they intercut like real life footage into it versus not? Because I know that.
Sure.
Like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. How do you feel?
I think there's the random scene of the Blitz when people are just chilling in the tube was interesting because they don't really return to it. I don't know. There's so many like iconic, maybe iconic is not the right word. There's so many familiar images of World War II, like the Blitz and like, you know, children Hitler. Being sent off with the tags and everything and the newsreels. It's, again, this movie knows exactly what it is. It's not trying to make anything too crazy happen. So, of course, there's, like, World War II newsreel footage. Rachel, do you have?
Yeah, no, I'm just curious because it's such a choice, I feel like, to put in real-life footage sometimes with not. So.
Yeah, and I feel like it was their way because I feel like maybe on some level they might have, like, wondered if because... this is a World War II movie, but so much of the action is taking place separate from the war.
Right.
It's a much more like intellectual approach to the war by having them focus on the code. So I have to wonder if them being like, we must put in the real life footage as a way to remind you that this is actually what's happening and this is what's at stake. And I like go back and forth with whether it works, because I argue that at this point, everyone knows what was at stake. So like, just by simply having Mark Strong say like, do you know how many people have died because of Enigma 3 while we've been having this conversation? Like, that alone is kind of like, oh, yeah, okay, it's serious. But I'm at least glad I feel like they didn't put too much real-life footage into it.
Yeah.
Like, it at least wasn't, like, a constant update. Because then I feel like it would have just overshadowed what was actually happening.
Yeah. I don't like war movies, and I think that, like, I like this movie because it is about like the more interesting to me part of the war, which is like the intelligence. And it is I can't believe I'm saying this, but like it's refreshing to see some sort of code-based movie that's not about the Cold War, because like I feel like the Cold War sort of like spies and coding and like everything that was happening is very played out.
I am A-okay if we never have a World War II or Cold War movie ever again. I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
I can take it that easy. Yeah.
You'll get
no
complaints
here. It's too much content.
Yeah, you'll get no complaints here. Every time we get in a script that's World War II, I'm like, no.
Please
nope,
no.
No.
Door is closed.
Don't want it.
I do like the scene, if we're talking about like tense moments, where they have to decide like whether or not to report what's going on
that
versus
scene
not. I think that's
rocks.
That's exactly what like that should have been the movie. Like I for me yeah. at least. Like I'm like that is like a fascinating moral debate to have is like do you tell or not? Like how are you willing to risk lives for this or not? Like that's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, and I love that it came so soon after like the euphoria of solving it. Like you're literally riding the highest of highs and it feels so great and then it pulls the rug out from under you and you have to face the reality of it. And it's a sobering look at it. Like, yes, we've done it, we're happy, but also what does that mean now for what our responsibilities are?
Yes, completely. And like the fact that it's all centered around Matthew Beard's character, Peter, who's like so cute, is like just a kid, is like 18 or 19, that they have to basically like confront him and be like, no, we actually need to let your brother die. And like, he's the baby of the group. He's the last person to be put in that situation. I think it is like that. That's good screenwriting. That is like good sort of like solid by the book A+ screenwriting. Like,
and it unfolds too, like already like in layers, because you have the first moment where Jones says like, oh no, like this ship is about to be attacked, we can solve it, so they start to move towards it, and then Alan puts a stop to it and says they can't. So there's the dawning horror of just realizing they can't pull off the attack, and then the extra horror when Peter steps forward and actually reveals like his personal stake in it, and it's like you feel like you're already at your worst point, but it actually gets worse. That's like, I feel like I shouldn't say the darkest moment of the film, because obviously there's the end where he's sad.
Right.
But like,
the ending is pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Pretty bleak.
But that's where like it's a more of a group thing, you know, where everyone feels the impacts of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think that it's very smart to have like the general moral stakes happen first of like, we can't let anyone know, and then have the added on, but this is different. It's my brother. It's someone that's important to me. And having to be like, no. Also no, because we have to like stick to our guns. It's great.
Guns,
I love literally the guns. Yeah, it's great. I love that
the
scene.
The guns of war.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the last scene that I was going to talk about.
Great. I read your mind.
Yeah, you did. Something that I am such a sucker for in biopics is at the end when they give you the little...
The real facts.
Oh, it's my favorite thing.
I wait for it with like breathless anticipation.
We have to know what happened.
Tell me what happened.
In this one, it's obviously very sad, because it's like Alan Turing committed suicide a year later.
Right, yes.
And over 49,000 men were chemically castrated during like the 50s and 60s. At the end, it's like he received a posthumous pardon. And as you mentioned very briefly, Jordan, this is obviously not mentioned in the end like titles of the film. But, and now, look, you can say whatever you want to about sort of like this bit of social activism, whatever. What really, I think, matters in this particular instance is the result, which is that a bunch of people that were involved in this movie, including Benedict Cumberbatch and, unfortunately, Harvey Weinstein, launched a campaign to pardon the 49,000 gay men that were convicted under, like, the same law that Alan Turing was convicted under with, like, the chemical castration, which just sounds so horrible. But basically, the petition like grew and grew and grew during like the time that this movie was released and like being promoted, and like a bunch more actors signed, and it eventually resulted in something called the Policing and Crime Act in 2017, informally known as the Alan Turing Law, thank you very much, which pardoned like all of those men posthumously. So maybe it started as a marketing ploy, but they did actually make a difference at the end of the day, which is cool. And I feel like this movie did a lot to actually bring awareness to the person that was Alan Turing and like his contributions to history, whether or not the portrayal was super accurate, which it seems that it was not in certain aspects. But like, I feel like so many more people know about him now, and like, it happens very frequently that people will be like, just remember the inventor of the computer was gay.
Right.
Like, the reason that you can do all the things that you can do, the reason that we can record this podcast right now over Zoom is because of Alan Turing.
Right. Which is then also where I'm like, you know, like, you wish that they did some service to it.
But I think that it, you know, you can have like, I'm trying to think of the right way to describe it. There are shades of gray. A movie can do a lot of good and also could have done more.
Right.
But I try to like give credit where credit is due as often as possible, because not to bring Twitter into this discussion, but I feel like very often on Twitter, it's like, if something isn't perfect, then it's not worth
bad.
Your time.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, I do think that this movie did a lot of good. Could it have done more? For sure. But it does. I think that it did make significant enough of a difference in the cultural consciousness that it's worth discussing. Rachel, do you feel like you sort of, since you were so on the pulse of this movie, do you feel like you kept track of sort of like reactions and stuff after the fact, after it was released?
Well, I mean, I've seen how, over the years, it's kind of like, I think it's because it's not too long ago, 2014, but it still feels like, in terms of the conversation regarding just representation in general, has definitely evolved even more. Because this was before Beauty and the Beast. This was before Rise of Skywalker.
Exclusively gay moments.
So, like, now there's a greater focus on, obviously, how certain big studios choose to depict their queer characters. And I think, I agree 100% that, like, this movie could have done so much more to show that side of him. And in a way, it's almost like a missed opportunity looking back on it now. But I also see how, like, for the time it was, which was not even 10 years ago, but it still feels like a different time. Kind of like, because, as you said earlier, Jordan, it was like a different time with the Oscars, with like looking at like the old guard thing. Like, that's how it was, like, that was groundbreaking for the time in its weird way. So, like,
this movie,
in terms of like pushing for awards representation for a movie that also just having a movie of this size then like make $200 million and like having it center on a gay character and not having entirely the focus being on the fact that it was about a gay character, because that's so much how it is now. Like, oh no, that's the movie about that person.
That's the gay movie.
At this moment. Yeah.
Yes.
So I just think that like now there is just push for better, because just like, I think was 2015 the year that like, not that this is quite the same line, but like that was the year of like Oscar So White becoming really big.
Yes.
I think 2015 was. So then it was like, after that, it was like the greater push for.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when there's a greater push for one, there tends to be a greater push for all, because you just become very aware of how, up until that point, everything was so whitewashed,
right,
in all senses of the word.
Yeah, and it's so, like, hindsight is 2020. Yeah. I mean, this is an extremely white movie. I also think that, obviously, all the British people, but 2015 was also the year that gay marriage was legalized in the US. When this movie came out, gay marriage was still not legal. Like, I do think it's really interesting to look at how rapidly things changed politically. And like, yeah, we're obviously not arguing that this movie was like the gay movie that changed cinema.
I mean, like, I think like there are,
Brokeback was 10 years before
that's
this
what
movie.
I was gonna say. Like, there are a lot of other gay movies in between then and this, and like even going forward from this, that are like even more outwardly gay. But like, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like, it's never gonna be one movie that like changes the conversation. It has to be like a lot of like little chips at the iceberg sort of like along the way to like try and get your foot in the door. Like, we've all seen that progress like takes forever, and like it's really hard to just like blow the door open with like one hit. So
I think we've talked about before is like, I don't like, I would love, as we've mentioned so many times before on the podcast, where it's like a character is gay and like it's not brought up, or it's just like a part of their life And like, that's just like a normal thing. You know what I mean? Where it's not mm-hmm. like this huge conversation point, because it almost feels like this movie walks that line in between the two, where it's like,
right,
we're going to mention that he's gay, but we're also not going to like focus on his gayness. Is that's, yeah. I think, where I bump.
It's hard because yeah. it's like, you don't want yeah. the character to be defined by the fact that right, they're gay, exactly. but you also want significant representation from a gay character. Right.
Especially if it's like a, yeah. if it's like a factual, like if this was like a fiction story, I feel like there's a little more leeway, but because it is such like an icon of yeah. like a gay icon, you know, like there's like yeah. a weight I think that you carry with that, sort of like with Milk in like 08 or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I like that movie.
I think Milk's actually kind of good.
Milk is good. Yeah. In my opinion,
kind of Franco. Kind of talk about awful people. I know. We have Weinstein,
James Franco, Sean Penn.
Jesus. Oh gosh.
Yeah, I know. But, Rachel mentioned sort of like the Beauty and the Beast, Rise of Skywalker, exclusively gay moment version of like cinema that is here now.
Even like Loki.
And it's like, yeah. even like Loki, which is like, there's one line about him being bi and you're like, okay, great. Mm-hmm. This is a bi character now. But like, are we ever actually going to see that in practice? Probably not. No. So it is that kind of weird line where it's like, you want the significant, you don't want it to just be like tossed off, but you also don't want it to be like their only character trait is that they're gay.
Right.
Look, it's yeah. a difficult line to walk. It's especially hard for queer really? representation because a lot of the time there's not visual indicators.
Right, exactly.
Like that's yeah. I think that it's very different from diversity because it's like, you can't ignore diversity when it's on screen. That's why it's so mm-hmm. great. You can really easily ignore that this character was technically supposed to be bi,
which is where queer coding, as we've talked about so much, yeah. comes into being such a
it's
big
so
thing.
It's so crazy. It's so complicated. Ugh.
Nuanced yeah. convos, baby.
Nuanced
yeah
convos.
And then it's always so difficult for us members of the community to like, where can you get excited then? Because right. like, you want to be happy about the strides that you make. But then it's always like, you know, you have to find that line of like what you're able to be happy about, you know, like to reference the Loki example.
Yes.
Like I very much would, I would like to see a lot more of it in the future. And I have some hope kind of, but like, I can't deny it that I didn't tear up a little bit when he said that, because I've spent years wanting that from that character in particular. And then it yeah. happened. So it's like, it's like it's a victory, but then you like have that moment of there's still so far. So how it's finding that balance of like being happy, but also not.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Exactly. I think that you can be, I think Loki is a great example because yeah, it did feel like more significant than the other representation that we've got in the MCU.
It was a line yeah, of dialogue.
Gay, thank you, gay Joe Russo.
Joe Russo at a grief meeting. Like, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
My gay lover is dead.
Yes, but like, so, yeah, like it did feel more significant, but then you were also like, this is great, but like, will they ever come back to this well?
Right.
They might not, but no. also they might, I don't know. But I think that like, that is actually a good parallel to draw to this movie talking about Tumblr men, if you will. But
my other Tumblr boy.
Yeah, my little Tumblr boy.
This is just
boys.
The Tumblr boy, yeah.
The Tumblr boys. But yeah, you know, the idea that like, this was actually like a movie that made a lot of money and was very far reaching about a character who you, it's not like you can say at any point during this movie that he's not gay.
Right.
Like, this technically is a movie that centers a gay character
yeah.
for a, the entire runtime, well, which is not about him being gay. But
we've had that
combo.
It's like with Love, Simon or like other movies where we're like Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, where you had the whole conversation where it's like, here are two gay characters. How does this portrayal like
yes.
do service, whether good or bad, or what is it actually like commenting on for our society, whether a good way, a bad way, yada yada.
We always yeah. need to have the conversation. We always need to have the discourse because we would have no podcast mm-hmm. otherwise, and also we would probably have no social progression, so it's good. I will say, I did not know much about Alan Turing before this movie, and since this movie I feel like I've learned a lot more about him, and there are some great statues of him in the UK, and basically every Pride Month or sometimes on his birthday, the statues get draped in rainbow flags and
that's
have
cool.
like flowers and stuff on them. I have a little picture up right now. I'll tweet
cute.
Some of this stuff. There's a bunch of different statues where they do it, and honestly, it's really cute. And I'm a big fan. And I think that, like,
next
you know,
time I go to London, I'll take some pics.
You'll
for
take
you.
A look. Yeah. I really don't. I cannot say how actually significant this movie was, but I do think that it made a difference in people being aware of this guy who lived a real life. And, like, I think that you can say
wait,
that is a positive.
Wait.
You're saying he's a real person.
Are you saying Alan Turing was not a robot?
He was not.
Whoa.
He would pass the Turing test.
Damn.
The Imitation Game blown right open.
Ooh, Imitation yeah. Game 2. Imitation Games.
Imitation Games.
The Imitating Games.
Speaking of games.
Let's play a Letterboxd game.
Speaking of games. Let's guess the Letterboxd rating.
Wow.
Rachel, would you like to put in a guess? For
sure.
The average.
I feel like. I know that it was, like, obviously well-received with all the Oscar noms, and it has its supporters, but I also feel like there's a lot of very fair criticisms against it, so I might go a bit lower and say, like, 3.7?
Okay.
I'm going to go with a 3.4.
A 3.4? One of you is correct.
It's Rachel.
Congratulations to Rachel!
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
I keep
3-6.
Lowballing all you these. Jesus.
It's a 3.7. Most people give this 4 stars. Also, a lot of people have seen this movie. 487,000.
It's a very popular movie on
very
Letterboxd.
Popular movie on Letterboxd. So, hey, there you go. Proof that Tumblr Sweet. Has just kind of, like, slowly
it's
shifted
weight.
Into film, yeah. film land.
Twitter,
yeah.
Twitter is literally just Tumblr.
Twitter is Tumblr.
It's the Cumberbitches.
It's the Cumberbitches.
I love.
Can't forget the Cumberbitches and the Hiddlestoners.
I would be a Hiddlestoner.
Yep. Yeah. Martin Freeman, poor Martin Freeman never got a fandom, did he?
No, which is a shame because, you know,
a Martin
he's a
Friddle?
Fantastic actor.
I know, he's so good.
He's the
good.
Bomb.
Yeah, you
he's
like him in Fargo,
so
right?
I love him in everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's yeah. so brilliant. He's
so good. So good. I really like him in the MCU, talking about...
He's great in it.
Yeah.
He's like
yeah, he's so
the one good white man in Black,
Black
Panther.
Panther. Yeah.
He sits there and he's just like, what am I doing? What's going on? He just right. gets bullied by Shuri. It's so
it's great.
Funny.
It's so good.
Talk about a movie that I am interested to see how they...
Oh, I have complete
Black Panther
faith. 2. It's Coogler's
Wakanda
at the...
Forever.
Coogler yeah. is at the helm. I have no doubts.
Let's do it.
I'm excited. I will say this movie didn't exactly make Marvel money, but it made...
A lot of money.
Money. This, like, so many people saw this thing.
Yeah.
It was released limited and that platformed up on Christmas Day for a wide release.
What did it open against, if you have
I'm just limited
curious.
Or
Christmas.
On Christmas? Okay.
On Christmas Day. On Christmas Day.
See, on Christmas Day, it opened against The Hobbit, The Battle of
wow.
Five Armies.
Two Cumber bitches.
and Into the Woods. And also,
oh my God, I remember
Unbroken.
This. Wow, what
oh,
a
yeah.
weird
wow, a
year.
Yeah. You got Hunger Games Mockingjay in there. You got Night at the Museum 3. Yeah,
yeah.
Secret of the
yeah.
Tomb.
Exodus, Gods and Kings, Big Hero 6.
Interstellar, Big Eyes.
You know, we didn't see this in theaters, nor were my family, like, the Hobbit fans. So I'm 90% sure, like, of the movies that came out, we saw Night at the Museum 3.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I did not see anything on Christmas that year because that was a very recent tradition. We never used to go see movies on Christmas. I know that you do every year.
Not every year.
Oh, really?
Some years, yeah.
Oh.
Depends. This year was a big year, or 2 years ago, because it was The Rise of Skywalker and Cats.
Oh, that was the same year, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God,
see,
I hope that was a double feature.
And Little Women.
And Little... I saw Little Women. My family didn't see Women for the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just saw it on New Year's Day, but it did come.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw Little Women on Christmas Day and it was amazing.
It's a good Christmas movie.
Okay. This movie.
Yes.
Overall, The Imitation Game made $91 million domestic. That is literally so
money.
Much money. And it made $227 million worldwide.
Jesus Christ.
Like, oh my God. Also, this movie made a lot of money worldwide for a film about a gay
British
man.
People.
Hey, now. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Look, again, it's all this shit that we've talked about. But I will say, that's a lot of money. Okay, this is good. I think we can take some good things away from this film. Jordan's giving me such a bitchy look right now.
She's just trying to make me feel better because I love the movie so much.
Well,
no, you
yeah.
can love the movie. I respect the shit out that you love this movie because I love some bad movies.
Yes, world's nicest human being, Rachel Avanti, does not deserve to have her favorite movie
I'm not
shat upon too
movie.
Much.
I'm not trashing the movie. I am having
I forgive you.
It's a conversation about
it's a discussion. And
weirdness.
And I respect it because I do respect everything that, like, everything that you've said.
Same with you guys.
You have fair points.
World's nicest person.
Honestly, this is like the. I thought this was going to be contentious. This was great. Like, I thought this was going to be like Old Guard Part 2.
Oh, no. So, I would not. I wouldn't.
We're coasted.
Okay. I bet if we talked about the Old Guard, Rachel would be on my side.
Do you like the Old Guard?
My embarrassing confession to make is that I actually have yet to see.
Oh, that's fine.
Rachel, you better cue that shit up.
I thought you were about to.
It's on my cue.
I thought you were going to drop a bomb.
And I promise that as soon as I watch it, I'll let you know where I stand.
Hell
please
yeah.
Do. You must have seen all the spoilers on Tumblr. Tumblr's obsessed with that.
Oh, 100%. Also, just I see spoilers sometimes just through work. Like, I'll be, like, writing about something, and I'll be like, ah, cool. I don't know this thing. I have to read all the spoilers to actually have my piece make sense. So I do know a fair amount, but I want to, like, actually see it all play out because, like, you know, there's different between just hearing, like, that there.
The sequel
and
is
I, like,
officially
the
happening.
Sounds fascinating. Yeah. So, like,
I'm
getting
hyped for that.
Yeah.
The sequel, I think, is going to be a bop because it does. My basic takeaway from the movie was, like, I am interested in the sequel. Like, that it sets up so much that I'm like, this is a setup movie where I feel like then two is going to actually be the one where it, like, delivers on what I wanted from the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those. Yeah.
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 I'll keep you posted on my thoughts when I finally get to it.
Yeah.
With bated breath, we wait.
We did things a little bit out of order, but
we did.
Let's go around and give our QQ ratings, our discussions on the discourse. Okay. I'm not just being nice. I think this very authentically. Like, I do think that this movie made a significant contribution to certain conversations. And I really do respect it for being a movie that is ostensibly not about Alan Turing's struggle with being gay, but does include a fair bit of it. Mm. And, like, you know, that's something that I'm very into, is, like, I just want to see gay people do things that don't involve necessarily being gay, but, like, I want to be reminded that they're gay or queer in a general sense, like, the whole time. All that being said, I'm gonna give it 3.5 stars. Okay, I think that it is hard to rip apart the DNA of this movie and, like, take out his sexuality. Like, it is very woven in, whether or not you want to say that it, like, is necessarily the best representation, because it is very sort of, like, sexless in a way.
Yeah.
But anyway, I still have a soft spot for this movie, and I like it as a period piece. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Jordan, where are you landing it on the QQ?
Is Rachel going to hate me after the end of this episode?
I don't think so.
No, I promise I will not.
All that I have said, I don't think I need to rehash. I think we've had, like, the conversation. I think that I agree in that I think that this movie did a lot of good. I think that there's also a lot of, I don't think it was intentionally ill or anything. I just think that circumstances around it necessarily and, like, its portrayal were flawed, and that, like, it, like, bumps with me for some things like that. But for all of that, I am going to do... Fuck.
Go with your gut, Jordan. We're not going to be mad.
My gut was a 2.5.
I think that's a good reaction.
That's better than I thought you were going
to
do.
2.5.
No,
right down the middle.
Look, the lowest I'll ever go is Bohemian Rhapsody, and that thing is in the dirt. So
that one was...
A whole mess.
I'm bisexual. You're gay.
Freddie, you're gay.
I'm so glad we all collectively remember that line, because
it's so bad.
I actively groaned because I was like,
yeah.
I mean, me out here just starving for better bi representation, but I was like, come on.
Well, that's literally all. We're just sitting at the table, like, all of her, like, please, sir, can I have some more bisexual representation?
And what we
and
get.
And everyone's like, no.
Freddie, you're gay.
That's why Tom Hiddleston saying a bit of both made me go feral. Like, that's
yes.
why. That's
it
why.
Was so
Bohemian
fucking
Rhapsody
nice to, like, have the line.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, Rachel, I could not agree more. It was so, I feel like every bi person that I've talked to was like, oh yeah, I remember that line, because it was like bisexual representation. Just kidding. Bitch, you thought it was so bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving off of Bohemian Rhapsody, Rachel, where are you going to land this movie on the QQ?
I mean, taking into account also, like, I mean, my personal feelings, because, I mean, like, at the time of the movie coming out, I hadn't figure it out myself. I don't even know if I was like super near to figuring out myself, but as a girl who was like very shy in school and like didn't interact with a lot of stuff, I had like my friends, but it was not the same. The movie spoke to me very deeply as like a person who isn't necessarily, I thought myself like not normal, but like,
yeah,
you know. And I think there's something to be said about the feeling of the outsider and also like the secrets you hold inside yourself. So for me, it's kind of what you said, Brooke, about how like it's in the DNA of the movie with some of the themes. So shockingly though, I don't know if I'm going to go as high as you. I think I'd just give it 3.
Wow. Yeah. Right in the middle. Wow. Also, that was beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. Oh, you're so great.
I think that you hit a point that I think we didn't. Yeah. It's like, this is the outsider part I think is important.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like an inherent part of just queerness.
Yeah.
It's like feeling an outsider and you're like, who am I?
And feeling like you do have to keep secrets and that you might be good at things that other people are not because you see the world differently.
You might be good at imitating what people think that you should be doing.
Imitating being straight. I mean, in the flashbacks, Christopher gives Alan this book and is like, you see the world differently. Like, I think that you would be good at cracking codes. And it's, you know, it's about being gay, but it is also, you know, it's also about how he's like kind of like a social outcast.
Your gay power is cracking codes.
Yeah, everyone has one.
If we all have a power.
My gay power is not being able to drive.
It's podcast.
My gay power is iced coffee runs. My gay power is walking fast. That's really what my gay power is.
Oh wow,
that's just my normal just like, power.
Which like, mine's just like remembering exact dates and like times and circumstances that I saw certain movies. Like I can tell you, like I went on the Sunday
where you
like,
sat.
The Sunday after Christmas at the end of 2014. Hooks It with my friend. That's what I saw this
movie. Baby. I love that's my brain too. We're both broken. Cool.
Hell yeah.
I'm like, okay, so I was the Regal Mashpee Mall. I was sitting in the third row back to the left. I had peanut M&Ms, I think.
That's like, that's
and a root
that's
and a small root beer.
Yeah.
Y'all are crazy.
Okay, wait, this we've actually never talked about this on mic. We talked about candy. Do you get if you're getting a drink at the movies?
I also get root beer.
I was gonna say, what's the soda preference? Root beer.
It's also
root beer.
I tend to go root beer, or like Diet Coke.
Okay, I'm a root beer too.
Really, root beer is the superior
root beer is
soda.
The bomb. It's either that or so like good. A cherry, like icy.
Cherry icy.
Yeah.
If they made cherry root beer, I think that would maybe be my dream thing because I don't like cherry.
I
want
to say they
Coke.
Have cherry root beer.
I'm gonna have to
at the machines, you know, where you can like customize.
Yeah, I could do half cherry Coke,
with those
half root beer.
Fancy Coke. Ones. Yeah,
because they have like I've had like all these insane Coke flavors, so they definitely.
I like cream
do.
Soda too. But I like them because they taste like pure soda, you know? I like, feel like the Coke has like some chemicals.
There's nothing better than like a good root beer.
A good root beer.
Yeah. Root beer just slaps. Like I would have way too much of it when I worked at the theater because for a while we just had like plastic cups and you could just kind of grab. So I would like do an entire shift just thrumming on root beer.
Oh, God,
did you work at
the
Lowe's?
Regal.
No, sorry. I worked at a theater that was, it was a chain exclusive to New England known as Cinemagic. Lives forever in my heart.
Cinemagic.
As someone who grew up in Massachusetts, I know.
Rachel is a fellow New Hampshireite.
Oh, yeah. I did not know this.
Yeah, and we didn't know until we went to school together. Yeah.
This is so fun.
Because we had class together and you said New Hampshire and I went, oh my God.
What a third act reveal for the episode.
I know, and I've been to the Cinemagic many times where Rachel worked.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And actually it officially closed this year.
Damn, not Cinemagic.
So many indie like local theaters are like gone now. Yeah. It's like only Regal or AMC.
If you ever hear the Cinemagic jingle in your dreams, you know who to thank. It's us.
It's you.
Yeah. Where movies and magic come together.
That's amazing. This is
Cinemagic.
Amazing. Wow.
Episode not sponsored, but maybe should be.
Hey,
Cinemagic.
I would
if you got money to burn.
Cinemagic promo.
What if we hire Maria Menounos to do like the openings to all of our episodes, where we're like, "Hi, and this is the Queer
Quadrant." Maria Menounos, and this is the Queer Quadrant. She's got that newbie money.
She's an Emerson alum.
She is
exactly. I'm like, we could get that connect. I'll DM her.
Yeah, we got this. Okay, we're gonna make it happen. On that note,
anyways,
Rachel, thank you so much for being here. It has
thank
truly
you so
been
much
a delight.
For having me.
A delight.
Yeah, this has been wonderful. I've had so much fun.
I'm so
fun.
Glad. You are one of my favorite critics. I have been a fan for so long. I love the way you write. I think you're so great. And if people would like to read your writing, where should they find you?
Well, I'm a writer at ScreenRant.com. That's where all my news stuff is and all my movie reviews, which I also then link to my Letterboxd, which is just under my name.
Good
Letterboxd. Yeah. My icon is literally just a picture of Florence Pugh and Little Women.
As it should be.
Because I just love her. And that's where I live pretty much. Screen Rant and Letterboxd.
I'll link your Screen Rant and your Letterboxd in the bio, our description.
Okay, cool.
So, are you an Amy?
From Little Women?
I actually think I'm a cross between a Beth and a Joe.
That is so accurate. That is exactly what I was going to say. I'm a cross
because,
between a Joe and an Amy. Yeah.
I feel I would be a Joe Amy, but I lean Amy.
You are just straight up an Amy. I hate to break it to you.
My bangs. Where?
Listen, Florence like redeemed Amy, and now she's wonderful.
Amy,
so, like,
Amy was always good. I will say.
No.
People were mean to Amy. I think Amy is a good person.
She's a brat in some versions. We can't start talking about Little Women, though. It's too late in the episode.
Look, we could start a whole
another
new
time.
Episode.
If you want to talk to us about Little Women, you can tweet at us.
Hey.
Oh, look at that. Rachel very smartly does not have a active Twitter, but we do. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple, wherever else you get your podcast. And you don't even have to decode anything to get to it. So it's a win-win situation. Throw us a like. Throw us a review, please. We would love more reviews. Throw us a follow. Tweet at us. Tell us what you think about this movie. Tell us your thoughts on queer discourse. It's a sticky topic. And also, let us know what you would like to see us cover in the future. Jordan, what are we covering next week? Are you saying we're going to be waiting for a train?
A train is coming. Can you hear? Choo-choo!
Next week, we're covering Inception. It's going to be great.
Dreams.
You already know everything about this movie, so we're
going to
save it all for
mean?
The episode next week. No, I'm not letting you do this. We're saving it for the episode. It's already going to be too long. I know it.
Dream on, baby.
Tune in next week for that.
And Brooke, do you have anything you would like to leave our audience with?
Yeah, I mean, watch Colette, watch Professor Marston,
yes.
Watch Agent
yes.
Carter.
Yes!
And
watch Agent Carter.
And watch The Muppets, The Great Muppet Caper, and The Muppets 2011.
I'll get right on that.
Which one's the one with Tom Hiddleston?
I don't know.
I think the second Muppets movie.
Okay.
But I'll double check.
And we'll watch that one too, just for good measure.
Yeah.